Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, saving lives and finding lost money. Assemblymember Paula Kay joins us to talk about an upcoming Red Cross New York blood drive and how residents can claim unclaimed state funds just in time for the holidays. It's not a shortage, it's a surplus. Why a Highland food pantry needs more visitors, not more donations. Hall Space is unveiling newly added works in its holiday group show Friday. We'll speak with founder Nona Hall about the revamp. And DVAA is accepting entries for a February show and their 2027 exhibition season. Details coming up after this hour's news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Congress has 2 days left to act on health care subsidies before lawmakers take off for the holidays. The subsidies are set to run out at the end of the year. The Senate failed to pass any measures last week. House Speaker Mike Johnson has a health care measure for his chamber, but it's expected to fail too. That means people who get subsidies are expected to see huge price increases. NPR's Sam Greenglass says some congressional talks are still going on.
Bipartisan talks are still happening among some rank-and-file senators, but most lawmakers have acknowledged a solution is not going to happen this year, which means premiums for many Americans are going to shoot up on January 1st.
NPR's Sam Greenglass reporting. Former special counsel Jack Smith is scheduled to testify privately before the House Judiciary Committee this hour. He brought federal charges against Donald Trump. That was for charges of keeping classified information at his Florida resort and for efforts to overturn the 2020 election. Trump has consistently denied wrongdoing. Trump was impeached by the House of Representatives in 2021 over the Capitol riot, but acquitted by the Senate. The president is enacting travel restrictions on another 20 countries. He previously paused visa applications for people from 19 nations, as NPR's Sergio Martinez-Beltran reports.
Trackers at Syracuse University say there are around 2.3 million immigrants awaiting hearings or decisions. They are all affected by this freeze. Some have been waiting for years. Immigration lawyers say this keeps people who may not qualify for asylum waiting around in limbo, while people who may qualify are not getting their cases adjudicated either. President Trump has also ordered DHS to review again the cases of around 200,000 refugees admitted under the Biden administration. This follows the shooting of two National Guard members last month. The suspect is an Afghan national who was granted asylum by the Trump administration earlier this year. Sergio Martinez Beltran, NPR News, Austin.
Stocks opened mixed this morning as Warner Brothers urged shareholders to reject a hostile takeover bid. NPR Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose about 212 points in early trading.
In a letter to shareholders, Warner Brothers recommends that investors turn down an offer from Paramount Skydance to buy the company and instead stick with a rival offer from Netflix. The studio says a merger with Netflix would be better for customers and allow the company's movies and TV shows to reach a wider audience. The tug of war over one of Hollywood's most famous brands is expected to continue. Two big unions representing railroad workers are hoping to sidetrack a big freight rail merger. The unions representing engineers and maintenance workers warn the $85 billion coupling of Union Pacific and Norfolk Southern would increase safety risks and raise shipping prices. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow is now up 225 points. You're listening to NPR. President Trump will go to Dover Air Force Base in Delaware today. He will witness the dignified transfer of remains of two Iowa National Guard members. Sergeant Edgar Torres Tovar and Sergeant William Howard were killed during an attack in Syria over the weekend. A U.S. civilian also died. Ayad Sakat of Michigan was working with them as an interpreter. A Dallas church is asking people to consider what it might look like if Jesus were born today. It has put up an unusual nativity scene. From member station KERA, Markita Fornoff has more.
Silhouettes of Mary and Joseph are surrounded by chain-link fencing topped with razor wire in front of Oaklawn United Methodist Church. Their halos are made from discarded bicycle wheels, and the manger is an old tire. Two burn bins and a shopping cart flank the scene. Reverend Rachel Griffin Allison says the arrangement reflects the lives of multiple people on the margins, like immigrants, refugees, and the unhoused. For her, the Christmas story is one of God choosing vulnerability over power.
Putting this installation out is not adding politics. It's removing the filters that maybe made the story feel safe in the first place, because it never was.
Griffin Allison hopes the nativity expands viewers' ideas of who is holy. I'm Markita Fornoff in Dallas.
Health officials in South Carolina say there are 138 identified cases of measles in the state. Officials are warning the measles could spread further, especially in unvaccinated households. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Imaginable Futures, funding programs in the U.S. with the goal of ensuring young children and their parents get the education they need to thrive. Learn more at imaginablefutures.com. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. A local lawmaker is helping residents give back and possibly get some money back just in time for the holidays. New York State Assembly member Paula Kay is partnering with the New York Blood Center and Resorts World Catskills for a blood drive Monday, while also helping constituents find unclaimed funds being held by the state. In Sullivan County alone, there's more than $21 million in unclaimed money waiting to be claimed. We spoke with Assemblymember Kay this morning about the upcoming blood drive, the unclaimed funds program, and her reflections as the year comes to a close.
It's always important to, in whatever ways we can, to support our community and make sure our community is healthy as it can be. For me, it's a little bit personal. December 22nd happens to be my father's birthday. He passed in 2019, but when he was in the hospital before we brought him home on hospice, the day that I found out the really, really bad news about him, there was a New York a blood donor blood drive going on right outside the hospital. And I was feeling a little like there was nothing I could do for my dad. And I walked outside and I said, you know, maybe I can do something else. So I gave blood. And I felt like, again, I couldn't do anything directly for my father that day, but I was maybe able to help some other people and other families in need.
It's especially poignant for you this time of year, but as you said, doing something that will help so many others. And talk a little bit about why it's so important this time of year for blood donations.
It appears that, there may be more incidents of accidents sometimes the holidays can be a little chaotic, and hospitals may be fuller than normal, and there may be more traumas. And certainly folks at Garnet can speak to that. But because of a lot of the activity at the hospitals during this time of year, it's important that we have backup, that we have enough blood to cover whatever could happen, and make sure that people in this community and other communities nearby have what they need so that our excellent medical professionals can do their job.
How would you encourage someone who's never donated blood before but is maybe thinking about it to take part in this blood drive on the 22nd?
I would say this, and I've donated blood several times now. I started much younger. I'll tell you, for a little while I stopped, and then I've started again. It's time out of your day, but it's a time when you walk in and you see the room, and there's a lot of people, really friendly, smiling faces, because everyone is so happy to see you there. You're basically sitting in a chair. You get snacks, something to drink, and we are also, because it's been so cold, we're giving out hats and gloves at this blood donation as well. But it's really just a great way to get a sense of community and do a little something for your friends and neighbors or somebody or a stranger. But just know that what you're doing in that hour of time while you're sitting on a really kind of comfortable chair or couch situation, you're helping people, and you can you can walk out with a smile on your face and know that you've done something really good for your community.
I wanted to ask you, while we have you, something you're doing to try to help people. You recently hosted a pop-up event at the Liberty Senior Center to help residents find unclaimed money. In Sullivan County alone, there's about $21 million in unclaimed funds. What kinds of money are people most often surprised to find that they're owed?
Well, so I never know. Unless somebody comes back to me afterwards, we've done a couple of these with the comptroller's office, and actually our next one will be coming up a little bit closer to spring, but we're going to do one in Fallsburg at the senior center. But what happens is the comptroller's folks are able to flag per person that you have a fund of at least $20, but they don't know how much it is and they can't disclose it. And so until you get that check, e-check or paper check from the comptroller's office, no one knows how much it is. So it could be anywhere from $20 and you get a great lunch to, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars. And it is incredible to me that Sullivan County, apparently, because we looked at these figures last week, Sullivan County has at $21 million of unclaimed funds. That's money that is owned by the people of Sullivan County, but is being held by the New York State Comptroller's Office. And the New York State Comptroller's Office is saying, come get your money. They can't give it to you if you don't apply because they don't know how to find you in a lot of cases. So you have to come in, or there's a link online. But a lot of times people find something from a deceased relative. Or actually on Friday, we had a really, really fun one. Somebody's parent had a gift card from a major corporate store, and those go to the New York State Comptroller as well if they're unclaimed. So if your father or mother had a whole bunch of gift cards and they never cashed them in and you don't know where they are, you might be able to claim those now with the New York State Comptroller.
And with the holidays here, that refund, even if it's a small one, can be pretty meaningful for families.
Anything, especially this year, anything. So I would encourage folks, they can call my office. We can connect you with the New York State Comptroller's office and see if there's something out there for you, or come to the next pop-up that we do. But we're going to wait until a little bit closer to spring. I don't want people coming out in the middle of the winter and, you know, maybe, you know, having any sort of snow incident. So we'll do it again in the spring and in the summer. And, you know, especially now that we know that there's $21 million just for Sullivan County, we really have a duty to reduce that pot a lot.
Yeah. And you mentioned, like, call your office. That's part of your constituent services. Just looking back along the year, what kind of concerns have constituents been bringing to your office? And what are you looking ahead to 2026 to do for constituents?
Sure. Well, okay. I want to back up one thing. Right now, we've been running a comfort closet out of the office in Monticello for close to a month now. Since well before Thanksgiving, and during Thanksgiving, my team did home deliveries to people who couldn't get out and pick up some of the distributed Thanksgiving meals. So my amazing staff drove door to door with turkeys and all the sides and desserts, and I made sure they had whipped cream too. To people all over the district. And then I had some great volunteers who called the office and said, we want to help. Just really good-hearted people. And so we distributed probably close to 60 meals to homebound people. And then my staff also got involved with the big Saturday distribution as well. We have a comfort closet at my office in the Monticello office at 461 Broadway. It's in the vestibule before you come in. And we have coat racks and hats and gloves and clothing. A wonderful friend of mine came in yesterday with toiletries, that he gave us to distribute. We have non-perishable food. And it is all free for the taking for anyone in need. We basically tell folks when they come in, please shop. We don't care what you take, take what you need. And then because this community here is so generous, other people come in on a daily basis and it's replenished. It's really like, it's really magical.
That's got to be one of the things that you're most proud of from this year on behalf of your constituents.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's really wonderful. But I'm most proud of are my constituents, because they've kept this thing stocked and understand the need and are so caring about our community. And that's a really wonderful thing to know, that we have such a caring community.
2025, kind of a up and down roller coaster sort of year for folks. What are some of the biggest challenges facing the district right now? And what do you see going into 2026 and, you know, ways to help improve the residents' lives in your district?
Sure. So I've said from day one that housing is a critical need. We need workforce housing. So I've convened a stellar group of our largest employers in Sullivan County, developers, both developers who have built in Sullivan County and developers who have never been here before, union folks, county and municipal leaders, and some housing experts at the state level to work together to figure out how we can build workforce housing in a way that is manageable for the people who will be living there. And by manageable, I mean the rent or the mortgage payment is doable based on the wages that they're making, because a lot of the workforce housing that is so critical is for people who work for these not-for-profits. And we know they're not making a lot of money, and we know they're doing some of the most critical work in this county. They are hand-on helping people. So that's the housing we're looking to build. And I'm acting as a matchmaker between all of these organizations. Some of these really large organizations own property. And if we can put our heads together and figure out ways to make the cost, the initial cost, of getting a piece of concrete in the ground, getting a survey going, anything. If we can reduce those initial costs, then we can get housing. And if we get housing, then we have more stability in terms of our workforce, which means more stability in terms of all of our commercial businesses throughout this county. And if we have more stability there, guess what? Our sales tax starts to go up and we get more commercial ratables, and then we're in business. Another area that is critical and also is certainly a piece of the pie here that I'm fighting for in Albany, along with really all of my upstate colleagues, is childcare. We did not get enough childcare subsidies. Upstate got, and by upstate, I mean all of upstate outside of New York City, got basically the same amount as New York City in terms of child care subsidies. And I'm working with the coalition of child care providers. I'm working with the county, and we are going to make sure that Sullivan County, which is growing and has a growing needs for child care subsidies, gets certainly more than it did this year, and that those counties who do not have the need or the growth like we do don't get as much as we do. So there has to be a redistribution, and that is a priority of mine for next year.
And that legislative session in Albany starting right after the first of the year, any final message for residents as you close out this year and look into next year and head to that legislative session?
Well, I do want to take a moment, if I may.
Yes.
To talk about, all year I've talked about kindness. And right now, as we are, again, heading into the holidays and into the new year, and the holidays should be really a special time to spend with families and friends and should be joyful. We all experienced really horrific weekend, mm-hmm. last weekend, with the tragedies at Brown University in Syria, and of course at Bondi Beach. Mm-hmm. And I would be remiss if I didn't talk about the effect that had on me, and I am sure on many, many, many people throughout the world. I truly believe that the Jewish people are one of the only religions that get targeted for terrorist attacks on holidays. And so obviously that's just not acceptable, not okay. And so what I've been asking people since Saturday night is, Hanukkah is a long holiday. When my kids were little, Jonathan and I used to say, oh gosh, we've got to get something else for, you know, night five, night six. You know, it's a long time. But what I'm asking people this year, Jewish, non-Jewish, atheist, I don't care, community member. If you are a member of a community, go to a local menorah lighting. Find one. My office can help you find one. It's 5 minutes. A couple candles are lit. People do a teeny bit of singing, and you go home, have some hot chocolate, Hanukkah gelt. But it's a sense of community, and I think we all need that community right now. And so I challenge everyone who's listening, come to a menorah lighting.
We were at the menorah lighting in Parksville and also in Monticello over the last few nights of Hanukkah. The message we heard was similar in some ways, that it is a horrible tragedy, and it can't but help affect you and impact you. But it also makes you realize what the season of Hanukkah is all about, the light, and trying to keep moving toward that light.
Right. Coming out of the darkness and into the light. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And there is a reminder for the upcoming blood drive, Monday, December 22nd, from 1 to 7 at Resorts World in Monticello. You can sign up at nybc.org and use code 71078. Assemblymember Paula Kay, thank you so much. Happy Hanukkah, happy holidays, happy New Year.
Happy Hanukkah, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Merry Kwanzaa, and I'll see you in the new year.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, a local food pantry has plenty of food, but not enough people taking it. We'll talk with the Highland Lions Club about how you can help coming up. This is Radio Chatskill.
Hey, it's Jason Dole letting you know how you can help nourish our neighbors. More families are struggling to put food on the table. Local food pantries are stepping up, but they need help. You can donate non-perishable food, personal care items, or baby supplies, or volunteer to assist with distribution. It can make a real difference. Learn more at WJFFradio.org to help make sure everyone in our community has enough to eat. Radio Catskill, keeping our neighbors connected.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, that was a well-timed public service announcement, but the Highland Lions Club is facing an unusual challenge. They have too much food. The community food pantry opened just a few months ago. It's well-stocked, thanks to generous donations, but not enough people are using it. The pantry is open 24/7, meant for anyone in need, but organizers say many residents may not realize it's there or may feel hesitant to take the step for help. Joining us live this morning is Greg Hatton of the Highland Lions Club. Greg, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Right place, right time.
Exactly.
Just hit it with that commercial.
Well, yeah, that's just on a rotation. I didn't plan that. But yes, again, it shows the need, but then also shows this unusual problem that you're having at the Lions Club in Highland. We usually talk about shortages, but in this case, there's an opposite problem. What's happening?
Well, we built we built the pantry in August. It was ready to open and do business in September. And we advertised it on Living in Barryville and through word of mouth. And we got an immediate response from a very generous public, the townspeople of Highland. But we're a little bit off the beaten path. We're at the intersection of Airport Road and the Eldred Ulan Road. And we're actually built into the sidewall of the Ulan post office, so we're not There's not lots of flags up.
Right.
The other two pantries in town are on Route 97 and right in front of the Congregational Church, right in the heart of Eldred, right near the town hall. So they're, and they've been up for a while. So our problem has been really until recently that we've had a surplus of food, and we're not necessarily we don't have as much outgoing as we'd like. Mm-hmm. Now we did provide local schools, both the high school and the grade school, with flyers, and they've been putting that in with the kids sent home. So we've had that, and then there's word of mouth. But it's what a food pantry is, to my way of thinking, it's a grace pump. If food's not going out, the pump is not working, mm-hmm. and it will jam up. So towards that end, you know, just before the government shutdown, when funds for people's the SNAP funds were truncated, we decided to help the other food pantries and donated some of our surplus, in which case we got even more food coming in. Mm-hmm.
So why do you think that there is this surplus? Is it just awareness or visibility, the newness of your particular pantry in the area? Or do you think there's, you know, a barrier for some folks maybe not wanting to reach out?
It could be both. This is a new game for me. It's a learning curve. I don't really don't have a background in it. And curiously, if you try to do some research on food pantries, they give you lots of information about providing balanced meals and how many calories and this and that. But there's nothing in there about outreach, how to reach people who are in need. And so it's a live and learn situation. So word of mouth is big. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's why I'm out here. I got a big mouth, so.
Well, you're doing outreach right now. Yeah. You brought along a few items from the pantry. What are these items, and why did you bring them?
Okay, well, if I have an extra moment, we got initially our stock was lots and lots of canned goods. All of it balanced food, you know, tuna fish and vegetables and fruits and, you know, the everybody said, okay, make sure you have pasta and rice. That's all well and good. But we noticed, like my wife gave me cans of peeled tomatoes. That's how she starts her sauce. Well, the only thing that was going out was the prepared sauce. I said, what is this? They don't know how to make spaghetti sauce. I was informed, hey, wait a second. You know, these people may not have cooking facilities. They may be living in an SRO. They might be living in their car. They may not have the funds to have propane or electric for their. And so that was like a big light bulb going off. And here's why I brought this. Mm-hmm. Our donors are anonymous, and we assume they're a combination of the townspeople and our membership of the Highland Lions. And when I put the word out on both of those venues, there was a change in the input, the food input coming mm-hmm. from the community. We began to see tuna fish coming in the aluminum packages, ramen noodles. And I brought along some samples for things, I'd never seen. This is these are black beans and a cardboard carton.
Right, a cardboard carton. They're already prepared. So if the folks could heat them up, there's an option there. But they could also just be eaten
during the warm weather. Yeah. They could just be, you know. And this I'd never seen before. This is called Ratio Protein, 25 grams of protein.
Now, that's like a yogurt-based, dairy-based
this time of year, not a problem.
But a lot of folks say when you donate, you shouldn't donate perishable items.
That's
true. But in this case, you're able to get this out the door quickly?
Yeah, in August, September, that wouldn't work. But
right.
We keep it pretty close. Two or three times a week, we're there checking on the on the viability of what's going on.
You've got a protein shake as well.
Never like saw some of this stuff
before.
Yeah,
well.
But that's what it is. The community has responded in really creative ways.
Well, yeah, and this is good. It's protein. It's, again, one of those cardboard cartons that you can find and you might associate with someone going to the gym. But, again, this is like pure protein, which is good healthy needs for some folks.
And this is one of our pièce de résistance. Hmm. Somebody came in with a complete it started just before Thanksgiving. It's a complete chicken dinner. It's got she's got stuffing. She got a can of turkey breast. She's got green beans, turkey gravy, and there's even mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
and an announcement of some kind. All
packaged together is like one like
remarkable meal. Kudos to whoever you are.
Yeah. So again, anonymous donor there. What do you think that Radio Catskill listeners can do to help with solving the problem that you are having? Getting the word out and supporting the Lions Club's pantry.
Well, straightforward. If you're living in the area or anywhere nearby, either you yourself you are welcome. But everybody knows somebody who might be a little too proud to admit it that the folks are not working. I've got a lot of friends who are musicians. We're not always working full time. You got folks who are young folks or older folks who are not steady earners, no fault of their own. It just happens to be that way. And we're all facing this. The money doesn't go as far as it should.
And a couple of other things that you brought along.
Yeah, this kind of gets to the heart of it. We got cat food donations and cat food and liners and stuff like that. So people thinking about your animals. But this week, a little Christmas present showed up. These are, I don't know whether it's a little booty or a little bag that's personally knit. It's got, it's a little red knit bag with a snowman on it. Yeah. And a...
Sweet. Yeah, a little hand woven, crocheted little package there.
And these are decorated frames that come with...
Well, that's great. And well, the community is doing good work. You're doing good work. The Lions Club doing good work. Where can folks get in touch with you? How can they reach out?
Well, we have a Facebook page, but also my name is Greg Hatton, and living in Barryville, you can get me through there. I think, or if you happen to go to 219 Airport Road, you can reach us. There, just put the message out there.
You signed off, I think, in the email when you reached out to us, let there be food for all. What does that phrase mean for you and the Lions Club?
Well, we're a secular organization. The Lions Club is not a religious organization. But you can't help... but refer to the miracle of the fishes and the loaves. That's just part of what giving food and getting food is all about. So, that happens to come from a passage in the Bible. It doesn't have a connotation of anything other than common sense. We who have much should be reaching out and giving to others.
Yeah. That's Greg Hatton of the Highland Lions Club. You can find them on the Facebook page for the Lions Club, or just come down and visit them down in Berryville. Thank you so much for what you're doing for the community.
Thank you for the opportunity. Yeah, God bless everybody.
Happy Christmas. Thanks. We'll take a break, and when we come back, a holiday art show gets a fresh look. This is Radio Catskill.
Hey there, I'm Jason Dole, letting you know that this month on Radio Catskill, we'll be taking a look back at the biggest local news stories of the year and showcasing the work of our amazing news team. Look, I've been here for decades and I've never seen anything like 2025. We had more reporters making more quality news than ever before, and none of that would have been possible without you. Another thing that I never saw before this year? 24% of our budget disappearing overnight. You know, the defunding of public media was a shock. It continues to threaten the good work that we do, but it has not stopped that work. And again, that's thanks to listeners like you who stood with us. I thank you so much for that. And I ask that you stand with us again. We're trying to make our year-end goal, and right now, your donation will have triple the impact. From now until December 31st, gifts of $1,000 or less will be matched one-to-one by Newsmatch and by an anonymous longtime Radio Catskill supporter. You make a one-time donation before the end of the year, it will be tripled. Become a sound supporter, all 12 of your monthly donations will be tripled. Plus, gifts of $100 and more will also be entered for a chance to win a two-night stay at the Artist Cottage Bed and Breakfast. A renovated farmhouse sleeps four, located near the top of Hoke Mountain Road in the town of Walton. Go to WJFFradio.org, WJFFradio.org to give today. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR, supported by listeners like you. Thank you so much.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, Friday, a local gallery is inviting the community to celebrate the season with art, music, and a fresh reveal. Hall Space in Narrowsburg is is revamping its holiday group show after several works sold, replacing them with new pieces and unveiling all submitted artwork for the first time. Joining us now is Nona Hall, founder of Hall Space, to talk about the updated exhibition. We should note that Hall Space is a financial supporter of Radio Catskill. Hi.
Hi, team. Very good to be here.
Good to be here, too. So for you to be here with us, this holiday reception, this is a revamp of the holiday art show, which is kind of a good problem to have for you. You sold a bunch of stuff, and so you have to redo it.
Exactly. So some pieces we still have, and the beauty of this show that sold art we replacing with new, if artists actually willing to do that. And we at this gathering, I am planning to reveal all submission that it's going to be there. And we have more than 28 people, actually, exact 28 people, including makers and artists. So, and we have some giftable textiles as well. So it's a very nice gathering.
And this exhibition, this holiday group show, opened last month. And because it's, you know, been successful with selling some things, you're doing this revamp. So if folks have been there already, what can they expect that's going to be new out on Friday?
Oh, well, yes. The show was open on November 15. And the beauty, as I mentioned before, like a beauty of this show, that it's the art that actually in the show, when it's purchased, it doesn't stay until the end of the show, which is January 2nd. So whatever was sold, customer will take it with them. Mm-hmm. And during this gathering, people will see what we replaced with.
Okay.
There are some pieces that still like there from first submission.
And you mentioned like you're going to take all submissions, right? You said that for this new revamp.
Yes.
And why is that important to give visibility to just all of them? You know, it's not just like curated certain pieces.
Yeah. So the whole point of this show, it's to make it relatively affordable for people. So our goal was to for artists to show rather smaller pieces, not big scales, and of course place is limited, so we kind of wanted to have pieces up to 20 inches, for example, right? Like if it's a visual art. But there's still stained glass, for example, and which were very popular giftable items. So we wanted to have for our guests to have fun and not waiting until end of the show and be able to walk away with pieces, which some artists actually sold out, you mm-hmm. know. So
and we said that this is a holiday group show. This is a big group. There are what, 28 artists, 28
yes.
Folks participating.
Yes.
Can you talk about a few of the artists that are involved, that, you know, without playing favorites, but, you know,
exactly.
We don't have time for all 28, unfortunately.
Yes, unfortunately. I know. It's hard to actually choose someone to talk about it, but maybe I could mention Medium, you know. So we mm-hmm. have a very few nice artists that who work with watercolors, for example, mm-hmm. and some of them very local, some of them from the city. We have one artist that submitted work from Cambridge, UK, and some artists that we have come like absolutely new to whole space, and some of them returning artists. And the new thing I think I tried this time to introduce for around holidays something not exactly local made or by artists, but company as Paris Villa. I don't know if you're familiar with it. So Allison, who owned the company, she works with beautiful textiles, and we offering that for holiday, you know, table decor, for example.
And you've been a fixture in the community for a while and known for supporting artists. And talk about how this holiday group show supports that mission of Hall Space to promote the creativity of artists, not just in our region, but as you're saying here, you know, the global aspect of it as well.
Thank you for mentioning that. My main goal when I open my original studio, and then now we expand it luckily. So, and I'm so excited about to give opportunity for people who might don't have a time to apply for bigger galleries or something. Mm-hmm. So I'm very thrilled to introduce our community new artists, and also support our local artists that, as we all know, we have tremendous amount of very talented people. Sometimes people asking me where you find those people, and I was like, oh, we actually surrounded by them. Mm-hmm. And it's hard and easy at some point, you know, to actually select people. Hard is because we have so many talented people, but easy that we don't have shortage.
Right. You know, so the reception for this revamp of the Holiday Group show is Friday from 4 to 7 at Hall Space. You're creating a festive environment with some holiday cheer decor. But what would you say to somebody who may not have been to Hall Space and is thinking about going there after hearing about this and the intersection with some of these new works?
Well, I would say it's always safe environment for any people. It's always very welcoming atmosphere.
Well, that's important to say because sometimes art can feel intimidating. Like you may not know all the mediums, or you may not know what you like. But what you're saying is like, come and just enjoy this community experience.
There's no pressure. You know, you don't have to be intimidated by purchasing. But even though we were trying to make this particular show to be affordable, so that's why we wanted people to be able to buy and give to themselves or to ship to family. There's also very nice items as ceramics. I'm also part of the that show, and we have actually two other ceramic artists as well. So there's very interesting atmosphere that we created for this particular show, that because it's you feel like you coming to the home and just enjoying mulled wine, enjoying art, and perhaps you find something for yourself and for your loved one.
You had me at wine and art. how could folks get more information? Where can they find you?
So you always can go on my social media. It's Whole Space by Nanetta on Instagram, or my website. It's wholespacenewyork.com. And I guess that's it.
All right, that's Nona Hall of Hall Space. Their revamp of their holiday group show is this Friday at 4. Thank you for coming in. It's so good to see you in
Thank
person.
Thank you, Tim. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Happy
Thank
and merry to you.
Thank you, and you too.
We're going to take a break, but we're going to stick to the topic of art. The Delaware Valley Arts Alliance is already looking ahead to 2026 and 2027 for entries for exhibitions. We'll speak to Tanner Simon about how to get involved and share your work with the community next. This is Radio Chatskill.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, behavioral economists Richard Thaler and Alex Emes talk with Michael Lewis about economic decision-making and how it's predictably irrational. It's the subject of Thaler's seminal book, The Winner's Curse. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures, here on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
Celebrate the holidays with Truman Capote and James Thurber. We offer funny and touching stories from each of them on this special Selected Shorts. I'm Meg Wolitzer. Tune in from American Public Media.
Sunday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Delaware Valley Arts Alliance has two exciting calls for artists right now. A member exhibit opening this February called Let It All Out, and their main exhibition program for 2027. I can't believe we're talking about 2027 already. But Tanner Simon is here from the DVAA to tell us what they're looking for and how you can get involved. Hello.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on. It's always great to be on the show. Yeah, well, I'm Tanner Simon, the gallery manager at the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance. And we have two incredible opportunities going on right now. So the first one, do you want to talk about the member show?
Yeah, I was going to say, let's start, let's go chronologically. I can't go much further than that. 2027, we'll still talk about. But the show that's coming up in February, you're looking for artists right now, the Let It All Out call for entries. Talk about the inspiration behind that and what you hope artists bring to the show.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll read the little blurb real quick. For a 2026 members exhibition, Let It All Out, DVAA invites visual artists, writers, and performers to share their emotions about the year ahead. Whether you are feeling frustrated, anxiety, hope, or desire about the coming days, let's reach deep into our bowels and share what we're feeling. So if you look at the open call on our website, and I'll say this a couple times, but DelawareValleyArtsAlliance.org, and then go to current opportunities. You'll find them there, and you'll apply and submittable. But there's a little drawing of like a little psychologist and a woman laying down, and it's a psychoanalytic therapy that we're kind of referencing a little bit, thinking about like the Freudian inspired therapist. And we want to dig deep into our own histories and our emotions and subconscious thoughts. Am I a little loud?
No, you're good. Oh, okay. You're great.
Yeah, we want to dig deep and see if we can understand how we're feeling now and maybe as a collective society why we're feeling the way we are now. Because I feel like there's a lot of anxiety and apprehension going on right now, and we need to be able to talk about it and make art about it and be audible and be seen.
Yeah. Your headphones might be a little loud. There's a little knob there that adjusts the volume, so that might be what you're hearing. But the levels here are fine on the board. But let's talk about the emotions that this show is centering on. Yeah. I think I know the answer, but what prompted this focus?
Well, really, I mean, a lot of people have been just kind of expressing the anxiety and maybe some anger or fear. And it's good to be able to, you know, not only have these one-on-one conversations, but to be able to kind of express it as a group because we're all feeling it and we can maybe
channel it. What are some of the artistic media or approaches you might want to see this or that you might be excited about in this exhibition?
Yeah, so for the member show, I would love to see, you know, all visual artists, so painters, sculptors, performing artists, maybe not theater necessarily, but thinking about somebody who's doing like a visual arts performance that happens once, maybe it's 10 minutes or something. And, you know, writers too. I don't necessarily want to put like text on the wall, but if there's a reading or something or collaboration, I mean, I'm really open to any proposal and I'll work with the artist and we'll see how it can fit in. Because really everybody has a voice. And if we can include it into the exhibition, that would be wonderful.
Well, as we mentioned, this show opens in February, so the artist deadline submission is coming up January.
January 6th.
So that's soon, even though we're maybe have a mind block about thinking about January at this point. It's really soon, just a couple of weeks. What do you think is a good, what would you say is a strong submission? How would you encourage folks to prepare a strong submission?
Well, really, the submittable application, we ask for your artist statement and maybe a little bit of writing about how your work relates to the open call, which is, you know, a few words. And we ask for three images. So if the work is expressing some kind of, you know, like abstraction of your inward feelings, and you know, at the end of the day, I feel like a lot of things or most things do that, whether we think they do or not, you know, like, you look at an abstract landscape and the artist is probably internalizing all of these emotions into it anyway. Even like a realist landscape, like why are you making these decisions in the painting or something?
You know? Yeah. And how many folks do you get to incorporate in an exhibit like this? Is there a kind of a number that you like to have, or is there like a maximum?
I'm thinking there's going to be quite a few people in this exhibition. Last group member show we did in last February, we had about 40 artists, but they were collaborations. So there were maybe like, I think there were 15 artworks in there. So the gallery looked like very clean and organized, and, you know, it was like very chic and contemporary, but there were really like a lot of people in this exhibition. So this show, I'm thinking, might have some more salon style hanging, not throughout the entire exhibition, but it's going to be a little bit more of like how, you know, our brains, maybe we wake up and we feel energized and then we slow down. So it'll be very organic, I think, which is ambiguous, but
well, yeah, but
it'll be organic.
It gives folks a kind of an idea that. So let's jump ahead to 2027. Hang on, everybody. We're jumping ahead to 2027 because you already have a main exhibition program call that you're putting out too. What makes this opportunity distinctive for artists and creators?
I got to tell you, this past year we had 10 solo exhibitions and one two-person show. On top of our member show and Art in Sixes, which I'll try to slip in at the end. So it's special because we accept submissions for visual artists to have a solo show, a two-person show, a three-person show, a group show. So you could be a visual artist. You could also be a curator who wants – maybe you have a group of artists in mind already and you want to put that proposal forward. So it's all fair game. Yeah, and it's very special, and not just because it's in 2027, but yeah, so it's a good opportunity for a lot of artists to be able to have that space in a very beautiful gallery setting. You know, it's
what's the timeline for this then, in terms of like getting it submitted? You know, the deadlines for folks.
Yeah, so the submissions are due January 31st at midnight, and we'll meet. Convene the panel around April and hopefully by May or June.
People will know.
We'll be notified if all goes smoothly.
That'll be for 2027.
Yeah, for 2027. So that's plenty of time to get your photos in and update your artist statement if you need to at the end of 2026 so we can be really set.
Talk a little bit about your curatorial vision too, because this, you guys emphasize work from artists throughout the entire region. You want to make sure you're broadening this out. It's, you know, the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance. It's a broad swath of folks. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, I was looking at the stats the other day, and we had like a couple, I think it was like two artists from Ulster County, like two or three from Sullivan County, a couple from Pennsylvania, a couple from the city. And it's really this whole like Northeast region we're really focused on. And, I think the mission is to pick artists, and we have a panel process too. So I'm not individually picking artists. We're assembling a panel of community members and artists and arts administrators.
Can folks get involved with that?
Of course. Yeah. Please send me an email if you're interested. And essentially we want the exhibition to relate in some way to the community values that we have here or explore them. Or be in dialogue. So you could be from anywhere. I mean, we get exhibitions from like Tennessee sometimes, and they're not automatically like, oh, we can't exhibit them. I mean, it might be a logistical error that we can't, you know, we decide that maybe they don't want to come up here after all. But
the main focus is the regional artists ecosystem here. Yeah. A little bit more. Just remind folks again about the deadlines that are coming up, because again, January around the corner. So for the February show in 2026, the deadline is
January 6th, and you'll be notified the week after if you're in or not, because it's a quick turnaround. Quick. Yeah, it's coming up, and then you'll drop off the work the week before February 7th, so the beginning of February. But I'll email you, and we'll figure it out. Everybody has a busy schedule.
And for the 2027 shows or call for entries,
January 31st,
which still is like a quick turnaround in some ways to get that done. Like, yeah, a little over a month.
You have a month, yeah, which is plenty of time. It's a very I think it's a very easy, beautiful, peaceful application. It's not intimidating. You know, it's very, very standard.
You're proud of your art that went into creating the application.
Well, in a way. And I'm always here to help too. If you have any issues with it, or you know, Submittable can be a little, it's its own beast. So I'm here to help. Yeah, because I mean, a lot of artists are still used to like submitting paper or through like Google Forms. So if you're, you know, It could be a different experience, so I'm happy to help.
We have some time to talk about Art in Sixes, so let folks know about that.
So right now, it is the last week to see DVAA's 21st annual Art in Sixes exhibition on display. So it is the largest small works show ever, perhaps in the world, definitely at the DVAA.
I would say, go ahead.
729 works, 200 artists, 6 by 6 inches or smaller, and that's the artwork. Or 6 by 6 inches. Mm-hmm. It's
how's it been going so far?
It's a very beautiful show. It's a very intense show. I mean, you walk in and you're just kind of surrounded by hundreds and hundreds of tiny paintings in a grid. And I think every wall has its own charm, and they're all kind of different. Some are curated by the volunteers. You know, we lay them all out and we work together to assemble them. I can't do it all on my own. I mean, it's a big community effort to put this show together. Yeah.
So looking back on 2025, looking ahead to 2026 and 2027, what are your reflections right now?
Oh my goodness. I'm in the middle of it all.
I'm reflecting on when will this be done?
Yeah, it's just a wonderful, and I'm very honored to have this opportunity to work with all of these local artists and to and all this local programming. And to provide that for the community, it's very special. And, you know, we need to get more galleries.
As Tanner Simon of the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance, the current Art in Sixes show is going on right now, last weekend for that.
This Sunday.
Yeah. And then also, if you're an artist and you're looking to get your work out there, you can let it all out in 2026 for that February show. And then also looking further ahead to 2027, there's a call for entries. All that information is at DelawareValleyArtsAlliance.org. We should also mention that the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance is a financial supporter of Radio Catskill. Tanner Simon, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Hope you get a little bit of rest and have a happy and a merry.
Oh, you too. Thank you.
That's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. A reminder that you can sign up for our free weekly newsletter and have it delivered to your inbox every Friday. Just go to wjffradio.org. On the right-hand side of the front page there, you'll see the sign up for the free newsletter thing. Do that. It's free and you'll stay connected and informed. Just go to wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Dog Mountain Lodge, providing dog boarding and grooming, also boarding cats, birds, and other exotic pets. Located in Coshecton, New York, and on the web at dogmountainlodge.com. And from North American Cultural Laboratory, Highland Lake, New York, an experimental workspace for performing artists and inquisitive audiences, creating a space for community celebration throughout the year, nacl.org. And from listeners like you.
On the next Radiolab.
Is there anything in our bodies that we have three of?
We plunge into those tiny...
Why in the world are we designed this way, where we can die of choking?
Maybe stupid, but not actually stupid.
I don't understand where lotion goes.
Questions about...
Is the water in a human body potable?
Our sacks of flesh.
Sorry, I'm just saying.
That's on the next Radiolab.
Blech.
Today at 2 on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Catskill Local News, Culture, and NPR. A little bit warmer today, but breezy this afternoon. High 39, wind gusts up to 17 miles an hour. Breezy this evening as well. And look out for freezing fog. We could see some slippery spots overnight and into the morning. Low 18 tonight. Tomorrow, 40. Low only 36 Thursday because it'll be warming up to 51 on Friday. There will be some morning rain and then possibly flurries later because the temperature will then drop back down for Saturday. High only 31. Some suns and a little colder, of course. On Sunday, 38, colder in the afternoon, and then kind of back to 28 for Monday. Looking ahead to Christmas, it's a possible snow and sleet. High 34. On Point is next.
WJFF Jeffersonville. You're listening to Radio Catskill.